I don't know if all of you can see it, but the only flag that was portable to bring in here tonight was the flag I hung up right there on the hood. So we do have the red, white, and blue with us today. I'm Darius Larson. I'm a Lutheran campus minister at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. And I'm up here for another 2.5 weeks, as the title they gave me is Village Philosopher, a person who tries to maximize input from you and minimize export from me, whatever. And one of the ways we do that is to have several different forums during the week. And this, in all forums, we don't expect. In fact, a good form is that when we do have some controversy, when we do have some arguments, when we do have some real questions put at each other, because it makes us think. We have no, at least I don't have any grand ideas that we walk out of here understanding everything about each other or understanding the question. I hope, if anything, we walk out of here wanting to struggle with the question all the more. I think then this hour together has served its purpose. Tonight's forum is entitled Three Cheers for the Red, White, and Blue. It's a discussion on resistance and patriotism, how they are the same thing and how they are different. I would like to set it up by just sharing a couple things with you. First of all, I guess it's three things. First of all, for many of us, we carry with us a deep emotional investment to being an American and also being a Christian. And sometimes we have a hard time sorting out which is which and which one should rule. And we sometimes just don't push it hard enough to find out which one should take priority in our life. And the first question then for tonight that I'd like us to spend some time thinking about is, are those two compatible? Can we be Christian and American? And if we can be, what does that look like? And if we can't be, what does that look like? If they're not that compatible, it may ask us to do acts of civil disobedience. And what does that mean? Some of you, I don't know if any of you are going to be delegates to Moorhead, Minnesota this year for the ALC's 12th convention, but they are proposing a statement on civil disobedience, and I just want to quote one passage of it. The claims of discipleship in the gospel may, in particular circumstances, call believers to disobedience of a civil law they find to be in clear violation of established Christian commitments to the sacredness of life, to peace, to justice, to freedom, or to independence of religious organizations from improper government regulations. Are they compatible, being Christian and being American? The second question I would pose this way: are we to be for whatever the nation is, or are we to question what the nation is as good citizens? To be a good citizen, I would think, means either to support our leaders or to participate in dissent. Now, it could mean both, definitely, as well. It's very interesting when we think about that little flag. The stripes represent 13 colonies. And to be a patriot, by the way, the fifth definition is, to be a patriot is to be a member of a resistance group. The second definition of a patriot, according, this is to Webster's Third International, is a person who loves his or her country and defends and promotes its interests. So there's there's some conflict even in its title. And patriotism, the word patriotism, according to the dictionary, is love for or devotion to country, or it's the virtues and actions of a patriot. And that patriot, back to the 13 colonies, Patrick Henry and all those people were dissenters. But today it's a different world. And our discussion today revolves around the question, three cheers for the red, white, and blue. What does that mean? How do we take issue with this country and still claim to be Christian and claim to be American? And how maybe we should not take issue with our country in order to be better Americans and maybe better Christians? That's just a little bit to get us going. Any comments on what I said or anything else that you might have been reflecting on?
Asked what kind of a definition are we following by American, because I don't see any problem with having been born in the United States, calling myself a European American, and by that I mean I'm not a Native American, and I don't see any problem with being a European American and a Christian. You know, if you're just going on that definition, you know, I was born in the United States. But if you would include such things as what the government today believes in, the American government, then I guess a lot of those things I don't believe in. So then I would feel I'm more of a Christian than I am an American. So I guess I would need a clearer definition of what
I guess the latter is what I was referring to. I mean, we are all, those of us who are U.S. citizens, several of us probably are not here tonight. If we are U.S. citizens, what does that mean about how we take the actions of our government, and what does that mean if it's a government of the people?
I think we have to separate principles upon which this nation was founded and the political deviations which we often make. So often you are told this war is just. Is this war just? Have we forgotten in our involvement with the political scene? Have we forgotten the principles upon which this nation was founded, which I think, by and large, have a great deal of merit? All men are created equal, we say. But this, in the time it was said, did not cover blacks. I don't think it really covered black either. So can we separate principle and political? Can we recognize them in the first place?
And what are a couple of those that you want to separate, or you think you're trying to separate?
Some years ago, I had an occasion to pick up from the library a book which dealt with the rulings of the Supreme Court of this nation over a period of approximately 100 years. A Dred Scott decision was included in it. It was surprising how, over the years, these rulings by the court, our highest center of law, the interpreter of our Constitution, presumably, did not lead but followed the general practices of the nation as a whole at that time. Is the principle of all men are created equal, if you wish to take this one, did we, good church-going people, kept slaves? Did they not comprehend the inconsistency of their position? I'm not going to carry this whole thing myself. So come on, somebody.
Okay, yes. There's a hand over here. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to notice that when the Creator, the fathers of our nation, created, they made a special effort not to create a finished product, which makes something that could change over time. And I think just history is showing that people have questioned things throughout time.
And they are, in effect, the revolutionaries, right? the rebels against.
Originally,
which
yes.
Which brings us nearer and nearer to the society which we think perhaps is a little more perfect. Lord, love us, we certainly have a messy one now.
And it is interesting that the people who founded this country really did not trust each other very well. And all those checks and balances that were established in those early papers were basically built on an assumption. I think this is fair that we had to watch out for each other because power comes sometimes corrupts. And that may have been a bad thing, I don't know. If there's anybody behind this whatever you call this chimney here that I can't see and want to speak, just speak up.
It's not just the checks and balances, but the creation of the government was allowed for to amend it, and we've done that. There's like 27 four amendments, including the women's right to vote and the suffrage act and a number of other amendments because the Constitution wasn't perfect, and in fact it was amended right off because it wasn't perfect and did allow some things as far as election of the government. Elected differently in today. It wasn't. A lot of the positions weren't elected by popular vote. The thing that bothers me, though, rather than the amendment to the Constitution or the basis, we've had our government in place for a long time, longer than any other government has been in. And it's relatively free. You have the ability to voice your opposition. There's a system in place to do that. And rather than taking the violent opposition, the sit-ins of nuclear plants, because we don't like nuclear plants, we pray for peace with the Russians. I see no problem with the Russian people, and I'm sure people don't with us, but our governments have problems getting together. And I think that's where we need to be as far as the differences. I don't think if we said we're going to get along with the Russians, we're going to do away with all of our military and all of our arsenals, that the Russians are going to sit there and say, you're good guys, we'll do the same thing. I think that's foolish. And I think it's foolish for us to sit here and say we don't have any protection, we don't need any protection or any strong front to stand there and let us practice what we want to practice. Religion, freedom of religion is one of them. And I think it's a privilege that you need to keep in mind that you have to earn. You don't just have it come to you for nothing.
So you would say that patriotic act, or it would not be a patriotic act to do sit-ins and those sorts of things, but to vote and to try to change things by electing representative government, and that is the role of a patriot.
Great part of it is using the process in place. It bothers me you offered the Christianity with regard to a comparison of being an American, and it would bother me as being a Christian, it's all right to go out and do some of the disruptive things that you don't agree with. I think you should consider that as one of the other options, too.
Very valid point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just like to wonder if maybe when I look at a flag and I see this flag state, I always think, I look at that and I think of nationalism as being probably the biggest blight that rests upon the human family than anything I can think of today. I'm not talking about pride in being an American, or pride in being a Brazilian, but rather the kind of arrogance and the kind of lie that goes behind those symbols, as if we can say there's one thing called Americanism, one thing called being Brazilian or an Argentinian or whatever, and there is no such thing. I think maybe we need to disinter Wendell Willkie again. For those of you who are, Wendell Willkie, some of us older people will remember, was a vice presidential candidate, and he wrote a book entitled One World. And that was a bad word shortly after World War II. And every now and then you'll hear people in the extreme right talk about with disparagement, one worlders, as if, you know. you're going to be Antichrist or something. But maybe we Christians need to think, at least from my Christian orientation, I am proud to say I am a one worlder. That's the only way I can function as a Christian in this world.
Teilhard de Chardin, in his book Building the Earth, said something similar, that the ages of nations have passed, the task before us, if we do not perish, is to shake off our ancient prejudices and build the earth.
And, may I ask a question?
You surely may.
This gentleman who just spoke. What do you see one world at in the relations of peoples to people, in governments, in necessary governments and services, of the equitable distribution of resources? This last would pose a great problem for people in this country because we consume so much. What do you see as one world? What are you willing to give up, shall I say? Or you believe in the one world?
I can't answer that question because I think I see it as a process, as an evolution. I'm sure that I have blind spots. I don't know. I think it evolves. And I guess what I'm saying, I'm just willing to commit my one life to movement in that direction. I don't know, but 10 years of evolutionary thought and give and take and push and pull with the Creator.
Is there something that we should give up in our consuming society so that, shall we say, more fuel is available, more oil is available to the emerging nations? Is there a responsibility on us, which we are not needing? We've got a bit of waste from...
Well, no, but where we bring it back is one thing he said we give up is our sense of nationalism.
That is an abstract. Our sense of nationalism.
Is it an abstract? Good question.
Yes, it is an abstract.
I'd say no.
What?
I'd say no. Well, I'd say it's not an abstract because it may be an abstract when you say it, but it affects the way you act in the world. If you think that nationalism is number one, that will affect the way you feel about issues of war and peace. It will affect the way you feel about certain wars.
The way you feel or the way you act?
Well, yes. It affects the way you act.
Give me an example.
If I'm Christian and I think that there are principles I should act by as a Christian, I will act by them. And is Christianity just an abstract? It's the same thing, only a different orientation. It's your principle that you move by.
These are high-flown things, but let us bring them to earth. Let us bring them
to earth. Well, we want to say, I want to give up my Nike sneakers?
No, nothing like that. But these are slogans we speak. How do you involve yourself specifically? I'm sorry, I went off.
Oh, I think this is beautiful that we're getting pushed like this, because I think it's one thing to say I've got a world consciousness. I want the world to be one, but I can sit and keep on living as an affluent American and not change anything I do and still have this lofty thought. And I think that's what you're asking us about. You know, it's nice to think the nice thoughts about one world, but what is it? How am I willing to be different in order to integrate that into my life in some way that changes how I live? And I think that's a very, very helpful and legitimate issue to raise for us in this kind of discussion.
Uh-huh. Maybe one step that seems almost impossible, at least in the congregation that I'm a pastor in, is the ability to be critical with our country at all. Last fall at an adult education, we showed this tape by Walter Brueggemann on prophetic vision, where he says that our prophetic tradition says that we can critique and that we can put forth a new vision to our government, to the powers. And 99% of that congregation, corporate, upper class, had no concept of what they were saying. It's not okay to critique your government. America's been very good to you. You live here or you leave. this man, this Brigham, doesn't know what he's talking about. He hasn't been in the real world. He's not practical. God has blessed this nation. God has blessed this nation. And if even there could be a little bit of a giving up, saying, okay, I'm willing to criticize my government, that would be an immense step for that one congregation. That's not asking for a radical lifestyle change day one, but a big change.
And might the problem be is that we put what is to be Christian and to be American sometimes come so closely together that when one is threatened, the other is threatened, and therefore we cease to be rational at that point. And how can we look critical without saying, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Type of feeling.
Yeah, America is doing so great because God has chosen us to be the new Israel. and that's a very nationalistic word for those people.
I think it's important to be able to look at the country objectively. I don't think there's any country in the world that's perfect. And I think that's one of the ways that America started, was that some people looked at the country and wanted to change it. And I think that's a continuing process. I think it's a patriotic way of living and being a citizen, is to be willing to help change, to criticize.
Well, let's focus the question a little bit more. Is it your first loyalty to work within the system?
I'm sorry. Excuse me, your profound point was lost in the last part, and it wasn't with your point. Try to start taking it from the top.
Is your responsibility to work within the system, is that a Christian's duty? You know, and there's the stuff that you can find in Paul that says, you know, obey the powers that be, work within the system. You know, that's one part. The other part is that your first loyalty is to whatever your vision of Christianity is, and if that is in contradiction with whatever the government is, then you go by Christian principles, whatever those are. So I think maybe that's the question that needs to be addressed. Is your responsibility to work within the system to the best of your ability in accordance to your Christian ideals, or do Christian ideals, whatever your vision of them, take precedence and you do whatever they impel you to do, whether that's within the system or not?
Yeah,
here in the seems simplistic, but seems like sometimes each. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. and others.
Yeah.
Some worked within the law, and others became so exasperated and felt the time was right to move beyond the.
So what you're saying by that is that the Christian principles come first, but most of the time, or some of the time, they would mesh with.
Many times.
Mesh
with the system.
But part of that then is that you're saying that if it became necessary, you would be willing to oppose a governmental system if you felt it necessary to affirm your Christian principles. There is some time when you would do that.
Yes, and I think that's the right of Christians. It may be contra-nationalism.
Okay, one, two, three.
I'm sensing a parallel with just the history of Christianity. There has been times when we've had to step out of the organized church in order to change. It has not always been possible to change it within the structure of the church. As much as the Reformation tried to, it was a break-off. And perhaps that's very similar to the political system, that in order to really affect change, there's sometimes that it can't be done from within. And when can you tell? But I suppose it has something to do with conviction.
No? Okay. Up here?
This might be helpful for some people, but along the same lines, you hear the word civil disobedience and you feel uneasy about that because it's breaking the law. A friend of mine has a catchphrase also, and she has done a lot of civil disobedience. And as opposed to civil disobedience, she calls it direct obedience. What she feels is direct obedience to God. And in this way, you Oh, in her civil disobedience or her direct obedience, whatever you want to call it, these she's worked within the system as much as possible, writing letters, doing the peaceful protest works, and when that has reached a frustration level for her where results are not seen, then she goes to the radical civil disobedience or direct obedience. And for her, it was not civil disobedience, it was direct obedience, and she did work within the system and then went on to the radical when she felt the system was frustrating her too much.
The phrase I've heard is divine obedience as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Someone with better recall for words, what is the phrase in the Constitution that actually demands that if certain things don't happen, the citizenry is expected to
revolt? Alter or abolish the government
if, in the course of the
if it becomes destructive of these units.
Okay, well, that's the essence of what I was thinking of. I couldn't pick that up.
So, you know, and that's one of the basic questions I threw out. To be patriotic, does that mean at some times to be called to resist the laws of the land, to abolish the land, to abolish the laws of the land? Or to be patriotic means that we always have allegiance to the laws of the land. Here, and then over here, and then there is something over here. One, two, three.
Okay, I think we're getting a little too flowery here, but like Christians recognizing what has to be done and going ahead and do it despite what the nation says. A little bit about my background. I spent about 2.5 years in the country of Nepal as a Peace Corps volunteer. And I live in a village, very rural, no electricity, no plumbing. And this was a time when oil prices were rising as well. And the sole machine in the village was a rice mill. And the people would take their rice to the mill and have it milled. But with the prices of oil rising, what they were, it became more and more expensive for these villagers to have their rice mill. And the reason for, this is a simplistic view of it, but the reason for the rising prices is because the Western nations were willing to pay the higher prices. So the OPEC nations could sell it at the higher price, which put third world countries at a loss because then they would have to increase their national debt to pay for the increasing price in oil. Okay, now, I live there with no hot water. I took cold baths twice a week. Thinking that when I come back to the U.S., knowing that it takes energy to heat water, and I'm sitting there in front of a faucet with the hot and the cold, knowing it's going to take less energy to use cold water, would I actually be willing to decrease like our national use of energy or our need for that energy to take a cold shower rather than a hot shower? And to this date, I've taken hot showers. I guess a case of really knowing what the better choice would be in this case and still thinking, well, it's just one day, so what, sort of thing. So I guess my point is, even though I consider myself a Christian, I feel like I am so ingrained to American society that I don't really do what I think is the right thing.
Did you still have
a... I was just amazed nobody would say that we have an allegiance to the system. I can't believe there's somebody out there who doesn't believe that.
That we have an allegiance to the system.
Yeah, you know, the position is that
my country right or wrong.
I don't think you have to be that concrete, that perhaps extreme. You could say, and I think you can make a case that says there is evil in this world. Sometimes that evil is incarnate in governmental form. If we want to take, the sense of this room is pretty much, the arms race is bad, and we should like the Russians and stuff. You know, you read that stuff about the gulags and the way those people are treated, you can count up the bodies that have been killed in all the communist revolutions. You know, what if you make the case that that is an evil system? And that if we believe that our duty is to keep more evil from happening to our fellow human beings, that if we choose to not oppose that system and they have world dominion, how many more will die? You know, there's nobody that will stand up for the point that Now, I'm not going to say I'm going to. I'm just going to pose a question. Nobody's going to stand up and say we don't have a duty to oppose evil. I mean, you know, Bonhoeffer came to the point where he says this man must die. But, you know, when he was part of the plot to kill Hitler, we have a need to stand up against evil. Nobody's willing to stand up for that position.
Do you take cold showers?
No, I don't. And I'm not saying I'm standing up for that. I don't believe that there's nobody would say that we need to do that.
What is your opinion? I'm just kind of curious.
My opinion?
Yeah. Do you lean that way?
No.
What's your...
But my background is as a debate coach, and I want to see the other part of that. I won't back away from that. If we believe that advocacy, and that's a big part of our legal system here, and that's a big part of the way we run things around here, you know, and there's a lot of philosophical stuff that says you must have both viewpoints to find the truth. So, you know, I'm not going to back off from that and say that's bad to look for the other viewpoint.
Can I make a point? I'm not American, but I can respond. From what I understand you to be saying is, you say that you as Americans and Christians should be doing something about evil.
Well, I know some people believe that. Yeah.
Okay. But now, I think here the question is, how do we do it best, to the best of everyone concerned? So the issue of opposing nuclear arms is not saying we should not oppose nuclear arms so that the other evil people can go on with their evil. But it's saying, how do we oppose nuclear arms and still keep the world in check?
I understand that. And, you know, I'm being the devil's advocate on purpose here. But let's change it from nuclear arms, because that's pretty, you know, charged. You know, you can say that that's a no-win situation. Let's just say conventional arms races, because a lot more money goes there. Okay? So we're off the nuclear thing. We're back into conventional arms now. If you say, you know, we should not support this country, you know, there's a fair amount of evidence that says after World War II, they just took countries. A lot of them. You know, and you know what happened in the Hungarian Revolution, and you know what happened in Czechoslovakia, and you know what happened in Poland recently. You know, you're just willing to say we should let that happen?
I might just say, though, that that's a quantum leap to say let's not deal with nuclear arms, whether or not people want to respond to that question. The overall question is, who are we as Americans and what are we doing? And that total picture, how do we feel about it and how should we act about it, I think is the overall.
I think the question was one of that you posed originally was one of allegiance, a primacy of allegiance. And I would take the position that if I weren't of a religious persuasion that I feel transcends politics and transcends nationalism, if I had nothing else to claim, then I suppose my allegiance by definition would have to be to whatever political organization political organization, I suppose, under which I must live. I get becoming very Socratic, I guess, at that point. I owe my allegiance to the state. But as a religionist, and I don't want to exclude just to Christianity, you know, Buddhist people would say the same thing, I think so. And now my allegiance is transcendent. It includes all of humankind. And my primary allegiance has to be there. What shape it takes, as this lady over here is trying to press, I don't know. Yeah, probably there would be a leveling out of riches and energies and so forth, but I'm
hot showers,
yeah, perhaps. But I'm not wise enough to know exactly what forms those things would take. But I'm sure it would take some form like that.
Well, as individuals, this is a continuation of discussion that I had with my niece about 2 days ago. Her position is that you don't need to economize on food, because how are you going to get starving? Her position is, I'm only one person, what can I do? I've heard that so often that it just sickens me.
You don't lay your thing on me.
Or mine, yeah. or mine, not yours. Might the problem be is that we do get so lofty and everything gets so complex that we say, or we at least think that we have to leave it to the experts. Or I don't even know who the experts are, but I know I'm not an expert. So in the meantime, I will just sit back and observe what's going on And you know, and what, when do we take a stand for that which we believe in, whether it be nationalism or Christianity? And they're not, I'm not saying that they are always diametrically opposed. Maybe they're never diametrically opposed. But when do we know where we're standing? Do we ever know, or do we ever think, or do we just kind of go our way without reflecting it? Time Essay several years ago said the problem with Americans is that they take time for everything but reflect on what it is that they're doing. You know, we don't schedule a reflective time to think about whatever our, you know, whether or not you should or shouldn't, at least you reflected on whether you should or shouldn't. And you may be, not to get us into a hierarchy, one step ahead of some other people who's never thought about that issue. But maybe not. But anyway, that's it. Any other comments?
Well, I have a comment on what an individual can do. One individual can do a lot, as an example, Norman Borlaug showed us in the Green Revolution when he fed the third world countries with his wheat and rice programs. He instigated that. Of course, once he got the ball rolling, there were several people behind him and several, the Mexican government and the American government, and I think the Indian government and several others. But he had his, you know, a PhD, he had the government backing. But he did do something. Mother Teresa has done something for us. But as the common person like myself, what can we do? Well, it is simple things like what Peter has brought up. We can give up certain things. I know there's a lot of vegetarians in Holden Village, and a lot of vegetarians are going on the belief, or some vegetarians are going on the belief that if we don't eat meat, then there's maybe that much more grain, or, let's see, how do I want to say this? The statistics are, which I'm not sure of, it takes so much grain to feed a cow, and with that much grain you can feed 10 or 30 people. Well, that's some vegetarians are basing their belief on that. Others are basing their belief on pollution, processing, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there's one stand a person can take. Another stand is simply don't leave your water running. You know, when you're brushing your teeth, shut the water off in between the time that you need it. I mean, those are small things, really small, and they seem insignificant. But if everybody did it, you know, you'd be making a stand. If you plant a tree, the government goes around and cuts down, you know, acres and acres of trees. There's no way possible for us to replace that many trees. They take down every year, their quota increases every year. And when you get somebody like Watt in there, I mean, you're looking at disaster. So there are little things we can do. I mean, everybody could plant a tree every day. It wouldn't be any problem. And, you know, this is going off the American and the Christian ideal. But not really, because as Christians, there's lots we can do. If nothing else, you can always pray. But there are things you can do, I think, as an individual.
One, two, three, four.
Five. Remember your numbers. Number one, James, number one.
Well, I was just reflecting back on my first time involved in some civil disobedience, which is really light, but back during the Vietnam War, and this was at Augustana College in South Dakota, so it was really safe, and it was after Kansas State. And I got to that point of frustration where I said, I cannot, you know, uphold my government in the actions that they're taking in Southeast Asia. And but I remember the inside turmoil and the questioning, like, boy, am I not going to be patriotic, or is this, you know, am I not a good American? March downtown to fall. And, but now I'm almost at the point where I'm guilty if I don't stand up for something that I believe in a Christian sense. And that, to me, supersedes any Americanism that I have. This past winter, I saw a film on acid rain, which was produced by the Canadian government, which has been banned in this country, by Reagan as propaganda. And I watched that film and I thought, where is the propaganda? And it's that kind of thing that disturbs me, that there's so much in our government that we are unaware of, that for lack of a better word, I call propaganda, what they want us to. And one other thing, last summer when I was in the Harry Truman Library in Independence, Missouri, and in that museum they have the table that the UN Peace Treaty, or UN Charter was signed at. And I just kind of stood there for a couple of moments mesmerized, thinking, you know, where have we gone wrong? We can't even talk to each other. And here's this table sitting here, and I never would have expected that it was even around, much less in a place of prominence.
Number two?
My comment seems a little out of place now, but I'm confused as to how a discussion on the relationship between Christianity and citizenship, whatever, keeps going back to consumerism. Mm-hmm. I'm not hitting the connection there. We'll finish on that. The other thing, a text keeps running through my mind that I've never understood about, I did not come to bring peace, but to set father against son, mother against daughter, and I don't know how that all goes. But that's been a text for me that I think has some political background to it. I'm not sure. If anyone has some some insight there, I can use the help.
Number six, then.
Well, I guess to say one thing, I think the consumerism fits in on the issue of stewardship. But
a little louder.
I think the issue of consumerism touches stewardship and seeing the world as a community. But I want to go back to, I think the whole information age, one of the negative things that we're so impacted by world information, that it builds a sense of futility in us. We see all these large-scale issues and think we have nothing to do or that we can do. And you know, I think there's another side where we've talked about water and the oil, and we can see that there are nuclear power plants that were designed and built that we don't need because of the conservation that has already happened, with some change in automobile design that I hope will continue. We're not using as much oil as we did for that mode of transportation. You know, there have been changes, and I think we can recognize, I don't know when it was, the 60s or 70s, that the business started to change, where they began to see that the profit motive was not the only motive they should take into consideration. The whole ecology movement talked in a lot about goodwill. The Nestle boycott proved that they just can't try to work only for profit, but they have to work for the goodwill of people in order to sustain their business. And I think we can work within that system and have a lot of impact.
So you come down on working within the system?
Well, I'm saying I want to take off the edge of futility of the system. And that's where I guess I would go, you know, I'd take the challenge of the devil's advocate over there and be willing to speak my personal opinion that I think the United States has done a lot of good. And I think in some ways has been the most influential country in the world for the positive sake of everyone. But we're not perfect.
You know, another way to focus this would be to say, how many, and we'll get to number four. How many of us are willing to say one cheer for the USA, two cheers, or three cheers, or no cheers?
Let's look at
and what
radical
does it take
field.
For us to start feeling that way? And you're saying there are some things that we can cheer about.
What can we offer the world in the area of medicine?
Yeah.
If we would only do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Four?
Just to respond briefly to this woman's comment, I think a discussion of consumerism does relate very directly to this American Christian issue, because much of American philosophy is based in consumerism. I think a lot of American society revolves around concepts of consumerism. So it's, I think that does relate to our discussion very directly. And actually, going back to another point was made about the differences that we as individuals can make. Granted, often we common people can't make a big impact by ourselves, but I think we also should not underestimate the power of our example. Just just that right now he mentioned cold showers is going to put the idea into this many minds here. Oh, that's something I hadn't thought about before. Or some other ideas that if you practice a certain type of denial of yourself that many other people are not in this society denying themselves, and it comes up in discussion, you have the chance to discuss it and say, yes, this is why I'm doing it, and it can plant ideas in other people's minds. And I think that's important. Even though your one effort may not make a big difference in the whole picture, that's true. But the example can have a very powerful effect.
But can I break the law for the sake of the gospel?
I don't think you can if you're a Christian.
What was the comment back there?
I don't think you can if you're a Christian. I'll say three cheers for the United States, sure. I think you have an obligation as a Christian and as a citizen of the country to try to support the laws that you're living under. I don't think you have a better system in the world, and I don't think you have more of an opportunity to voice your opinions. But I don't think as a Christian you can go out and break the law and be comfortable with yourself.
May I respond?
What?
Can I respond?
Well, wait, Dan was the next number, and then there was a sick list. We'll hold it, yeah. Okay. Dan?
It's important just to remember that the apostles broke the law in the New Testament, and the Augsburg Confession of Lutheran Church calls for civil disobedience, if it is a matter of Christian conscience. So that's an addition, and I'm not going to say what I was going to say.
What? You have something more you said?
No.
No?
I'm going to be a girl somewhere.
I'll respond by asking you a question with due respect. I ask, would you dismantle a law that you, as a Christian, didn't feel was good or was just? Would you dismantle it, not break it, try to dismantle it?
Sure, I'd advocate dismantling it.
And eventually that would be equivalent to breaking the law. I mean, breaking the law doesn't mean defying, doing a criminal act. It means dismantling it through the right channels. And eventually...
That's not breaking the law, though. Our system of government allows us to do that.
But you may be forced to do some things that would be equivalent to breaking the law in the process of trying to dismantle that law.
Yeah, I don't think so. I sympathize with the situation you have in South Africa. You have extremes of haves and have-nots, a very great imbalance. But you can't really say that the haves don't belong here because they've been there a long time. And what has been developed over a long period of time. And the have-nots at this point are saying that we have a right to have more liberty, more freedom, more of the things that the haves enjoy. And I don't know how to bring that system together where there's more of an equality, more of a balance. We have a lot of similar situations in this country, and that imbalance is still there. And just to say that we're gonna make everybody equal and make everybody have the same amount, it isn't going to work out because you're going to have the same on both sides that are going to reach for more and obtain more, and you're still going to have an imbalance. I don't have the answer to you, but I don't think breaking the law. Okay.
And also, I might just, because you're coming in South Africa, I'll put in an announcement right here that tomorrow night the forum will deal with living within an apartheid state, differing perspectives, and we'll be having a panel here sharing some of their perspectives and then asking questions and answers. So we'll be getting into that in a more intense way tomorrow.
Okay, back to this consumerism bit too. My point in this cold shower business was not in that hot showers are bad, but it's taking a look at what the cost is involved in taking a hot shower. And if there were a way then to get hot water without consuming these resources, which are needed by third world countries, I would look in that direction rather than thinking of shutting off the water. So I guess it's the problem of what the cost is in my actions. The same would be true with eating bananas. Eating bananas is not bad in and of itself. Also, to elaborate on what Mahmoud said here, which I guess he hadn't occurred to us now, I think at least what I heard him saying was, it's only a matter of timing of what you're doing is legal at one time, illegal at another, if the law has changed. So a person could do the same action, which is illegal, but then through the course of law, the law be changed, and all of a sudden it becomes legal.
We now have a national holiday for Martin Luther King Jr. You know, and at one time he was breaking laws right and left, you know, in civil disobedience. Was there another hand? There's a, okay, yeah.
I just wanted to get a point of clarification on your statement, that I understand you to say that it, that if there was a law of the land that said X, and your Christian conscience said Y, that you feel that you would have to do X.
I try to get out of doing use every means I could but to get out of it.
Push come to shove, would you do X or Y? I just need to know your position.
For a yes or no answer, and I'd have to give you the same answer that you gave the lady that asked you a question a minute ago. I'd have to look at the situation.
Okay. So what you're saying then, that you immediately now become a relativist.
You're using words I don't...
Okay, well, I mean, that you're willing to say, well, wait a minute, no, it's not black and white. I'm a situational ethicist then at that point.
Nothing's black and white.
Ah, okay. Because I was just going to say that if I understood things as you were putting it, we would not have had an American Revolution.
That's right. Well...
No.
If I can help a bit, you're saying not for all countries and all governments, but because this government allows certain channels of erring, quote, legally, that you feel we should go through the legal channels
as much as possible, certainly.
Okay, as much as possible. I didn't hear that last time.
The American Revolution actually they tried to. Go through the channels at that time, and they really took a chance when they did, because they could have lost, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't have been here under this situation if they had lost. Some of the things that were the chips fall that this country came about, and what we're doing here now is saying that it's because that precedent's been set, it's fine again to do it, and when you go out and break the law, you're going to take away or advocate taking away some rights of other people. Christians or non-Christians, both, and I would have trouble in rationalizing that.
I guess I'm hearing you say something different the second time around. You seem to be giving more possibility. What I'm hearing you say now is that, yes, I think we initially should try to obey, and we should try to change through established procedures if we can. But when we've done all that, then what?
I have to look at the situation.
Okay.
About 5 more minutes, too. Yeah.
I hear civil disobedience becoming kind of the in thing of the 80s. The conversation I hear around here tonight is, you know, it's well and good, and you know, it's kind of the in thing to do. Like protesting the Vietnam War was in 68 to 72. I think as a Christian, civil disobedience is a right thing an action to take in the appropriate circumstances. However, as a man here has said, we're first and foremost Christians and guided by that reasoning and that philosophy of what we should do. We are also, but I think secondarily, Americans. And I think if we're going to be Americans and see the system as a useful system and beneficial system, then we need to have an obligation to work within that system to the full extent possible. What we're here tonight is that, you know, we're not really going to work within the system to the full extent possible because we're going to jump on the bandwagon of civil disobedience, because it's the catchphrase that is being bandied around. It seems to me that working within the system and any change that can be made within the system will have the greatest impact on the greatest amount of people than civil disobedience, which will result in being banded as an extremist and radical, which may ultimately result in some change, will take a lot longer time.
Isn't civil disobedience working within the system?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you break the law, but if you're thrown in jail for breaking the law, that's still working within the system. If you're willing to pay the consequences, isn't that working within the system?
Yes.
I mean, it's a more radical working within the system than most of us would want to do.
You know, I agree with that. I agree that it is working within the system, but it's an within the American system, I would say it's an unacceptable.
Oh, okay. Up here.
But there's one purpose of civil disobedience, I think, that you're ignoring it, and that is that when people go out and do civil disobedience, such as going to a Sabbath base and pouring human blood on the runway or whatever, they are pushing the rest of us to look at the way we're working within the system. And I think that if those people who are doing that civil disobedience would not do it, I don't think the rest of us would be pushed.
They are our prophets, maybe? The crazy prophets?
Yes.
Al, were you?
Okay. Basically, I guess it's been said, but I do not believe in, you know, our country, right or wrong. I do believe that Christian law transcends national law. However, I just sometimes get a feeling some individuals, and I don't know specifically who, but I get the tone from some that by believing those two things, that negates any sense of national loyalty or pride. And I don't mean the, you know, simple how great we are type of pride, but I think comparing it to a family, you know, all families are not perfect. Our family is not perfect. Yet I believe in marriage and families. And I think there is, well, this is probably better shared with one or two people, but I had some real stirrings this morning during that parade, and I'm not sure what all feelings were there. Maybe some of them were very blind patriotism or something. But I felt there was, in a sense, a mockery. And it's probably not intended, and I'm trying to put it in I words, but a real mockery of the way our national anthem was used. I've never seen it used in quite that way. And, you know, I just felt like it was saying, I had a sense of that the other flags were all treated much more respectfully than ours. And I felt, you know, the pause under the flagpole, which really wasn't a pause, and all the clownery that was going on with it, and so on, spoke to me that maybe we're going too far the other way. Do you get what I'm saying at all?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can I respond?
And that was, you know, a lot of that was more emotion, and I haven't had a time to think through it, and probably this was not the place to do it, but I think there's a risk of saying nation right or wrong, but there's also a risk of saying the more we can put ourselves down and the less respect we can show to our flag and to our anthem and to all those, you know, mother and apple pie type things, you know, that means we're really good Christians, and I'm uncomfortable with that.
Yes. One comment, and then myself, and if anybody is dying to have a last word, we'll have one more after that.
I want to respond to the question of the flag, as you put it. Otherwise, I will respond, however, to your question of nationalism in this room. I don't feel anybody's less nationalistic in this room. It's just a discussion. And also, I'll ask you a question. You mentioned your family. And now my question is, would you warn your family of anything that you saw was leading to them to self-destruction? Would you warn them, or would you go with them because they're family? Yeah. Would you go with them? Would you go with them, or would you warn them against anything that you suspect may lead them to self-destruction?
Yes.
You would warn them. Yes, then I feel even all the people here would feel willing to warn their nation if they know, or if they suspect it may be leading itself to self-destruction.
And I affirm that very much.
So that's not being un-nationalistic, as I got your point.
Okay, well, then if this were a protest against something, then I want to know it was a protest against, and I may be doing the same thing, you know.
So wouldn't that maybe be a protest out of caring? Instead instead of protesting again, protesting because we do care for this nation, because it does have something good to offer, and we don't like to see it self-destructive, we don't like to see it evil. So we protest, as we would with our families. When you see us, see a family or your children doing things very destructive, or your parents, you try to comment or make, offer what you think you must.
Yeah, I'm sure I missed the point. I marched in the Vietnam protests, and I'm in many ways an activist. I'm not on that vein at all. I'm saying let's not throw the baby out with the water.
And I'm agreeing with that.
Let's continue this conversation after Compline. But I might just say that we've been confusing, I think, America with Reagan or 1984 a lot. And I hope and pray that America is larger than that. And I hope and pray that because of checks and balances and all that sort of stuff, that we would be able to, whatever we feel the current situation is, good, bad, or indifferent, that I do believe that this government allows us to work within the system, and that working within the system might mean to disobey it, because the system includes then the consequences of that. And if you're willing to go with the consequences, you're willing to do it anyway, I guess. And I think I can say three cheers for the red, white, and blue with that comment. I don't know if I can say three cheers for the red, white, and blue for this, but this system does have a lot more in it. So. Does anybody have a last word? Yes, last word, right here.
I don't know if this is just my Lutheran neuroses or what, but whenever we talk about nationalism, I feel the most guilt at any other time. Mm. And I think I can't get away from 80s Reagan. I can't see out of that or beyond that. I feel guilty, and I feel split apart, because I also will not leave this country because I know it will take care of me. White, educated, it's going to take care of me. And so it's you feel like a prostitute. Mm-hmm. I do, because I'm not proud of American. That's that sin.
Compline, here, 5 minutes. Go in peace.